health industry groups are expected to deliver.
If you like the plan you have, you can keep it.
To take over the healthcare system, either directly or indirectly, for the government to control it.
A lot of my friends, where they get their healthcare from is the emergency room. They're in the emergency room every week. They break a nail in the emergency room.
How are you going to avoid not having the ability to cost shift as you shrink that portion of privately funded health insurance?
Well, in our continuing discussion on the health reform debate going on all spring and all this summer, hospitals are the latest arm of the healthcare industry to get on board with President Obama's plan to retool the healthcare system, at least in terms of rhetoric. Vice President Joe Biden is expected to announce later this morning that hospitals have agreed to pony up $151 billion over the next 10 years to care for some of this country's uninsured. Well, we're here now with Dr. Herb Pardes. He's president and CEO of New York Presbyterian Hospital, as we said, one of the largest hospitals and hospital systems in the United States. And we're also joined on the line with by David Herzenhorn, reporter for our partner, the New York Times, who covers the Senate. He's been writing about today's agreement in the paper. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Pardes, you're here in the studio, and I want to start with you. $151 billion in this announcement from the Vice President and Secretary Kathleen Sebelius later on today. $151 billion? Where's it going to come from?
Well, my impression is that hospitals will have to squeeze quite a bit. They already are being squeezed in states like New York. We've had successive cuts because of problems in state budgets, and that's not unusual around the country. But one of the most important things that's happening in this new health reform effort is the fact that we're trying to spread coverage as widely as possible. And I think that's an important principle, long overdue. And by providing that kind of coverage, hopefully that provides some revenue to the hospitals to take care of some of the reductions that they take, but also means better quality care for people and a place that they can go for their health care, which means that they won't be coming, hopefully, in as many numbers to the emergency room.
So that means when uninsured people come to the emergency room or people who cycle in and out of Medicaid maybe come to the emergency room, hospitals scrap for money from the state and from the federal government. But if everybody's insured, as the president and people in Congress hope they'll achieve, then that's basically a larger revenue pool for you, and you can afford some cuts elsewhere.
Creates a far better climate for the patient, first and foremost. The patients who don't have a doctor, don't have a nurse practitioner, somebody who takes care of them, is often coming into the emergency room too late, more sick, more required costs, and the emergency rooms around the country are just choked.
Now, a lot of people might have read, may not have read, actually, Paul O'Neill's editorial in the New York Times 2 days ago, which struck me. He's saying there's a lot of savings at hospitals by doing some easy things that we've been wanting them to do for years and years. Hygiene, preventing intra-hospital infections, making sure nurses and doctors and orderlies wash their hands many, many, many times a day. It's cheap and could save billions, and it's not being done. You think that's part of this plan? Is that something that Congress can account for in their savings or something you need to do on your own?
We are doing it. Many, many hospitals are working. Hand washing, I think, is critical. Very crucial to infection control. And for example, at New York Presbyterian, we have some of the highest figures in terms of hand washing throughout the country. And we take it very seriously. We have quiet observers who make sure that people are doing it, and we're pleased with it, and we're seeing results in terms of reduced infections. I think Paul O'Neill makes a good point. Whether one can get as far as he says may be a little bit more challenging, but I certainly think we should be pushing as aggressively as we can.
All right, Dr. Herbert Pardes, psychiatrist, CEO of New York Presbyterian Hospital, is in the studio with us, and I want to turn to David Herzenhorn, Senate reporter for the New York Times. He's been writing about the proposed $151 billion in hospital savings in the Times today. David, the hospitals aren't the first major healthcare industry lobbying constituency group to come forward and say they want to pony up money, but that sounds really great to me. What do the details look like in Washington in terms of where you get this money?
They're not the first. The drug companies would be happy to tell you that they were the first.
Right.
You know, Rahm Emanuel, the White House Chief of Staff, says a lot these days. Everybody wants to jump on this train because they realize it's leaving the station. But you know, there are so many ins and outs to this, and obviously one of the key components in the agreement with the hospitals was assuring them that in fact all these other changes that the Obama administration and Congress are promising will actually take hold. And so a lot of this cost savings, Todd, you know the Congress as well as I do, takes place over the course of the full 10 years that the Congressional Budget Office scores legislation. And they actually target some of the savings to kick in later on once they've proven that insurance coverage has expanded more broadly to create that larger pool of patients. But what we don't know is how effective that will be, how many people will end up covered that aren't covered right now, and even if they are covered, do things really start getting more cheaper and more effective? Or down the line, do you realize you're providing a lot more care to a lot more people at a lot bigger price?
And I got to ask you about the politics of this, David, because this is the second such announcement. Actually, it's the third. We had all of the industry groups holding hands together about a month ago saying they were going to save $2 trillion over 10 years. And then pharma and the drug companies said they would pony up 80. The hospitals say 151. Nobody's seen a penny of it yet because the debate's not over. And The White House trots these out as a growing consensus on health reform, but the debate in Congress where the heavy lifting is being done doesn't seem to be affected too terribly much by these announcements in the debates between individual lawmakers.
Well, it is to some degree, because Max Baucus, for instance, Senator from Montana, Chairman of the Finance Committee, has been heavily involved in some of these talks. But, of course, one committee, one group of senators is not going to get you a bill passed. And so even as Baucus was a huge player, maybe the central player in helping to bring this hospital agreement about, Chris Dodd, the Democrat from Connecticut who's leading the health committee in the absence of Ted Kennedy, was saying yesterday, look, I want to know what the ask is. What are these groups asking for in exchange for the savings? He says a lot of times, you know, the cost of the ask exceeds whatever savings you're going to get. Then you have a senator like Olympia Snowe, centrist Republican from Maine, who could provide a crucial Republican vote for a health care plan, who said, look, I haven't signed on to any of this. You know, we haven't seen the details. You know, it's one thing for the president to make an agreement. It's another thing for Congress to do that. But what they are doing is certainly lining up folks who could be major obstacles. If America's hospitals come out and say, this is a bad bill, this is a bad idea, you're not going to get the kind of care that you've come to expect in this country.
We've got the institutional players, we've got the Congress, but let me bring the consumers in here for a second, David Hersenhorn of the New York Times. I mean, and I actually want to take from what you were saying, which actually disturbed me a little bit, and put it to Herbert Pardes here in the studio from New York Presbyterian Hospital. It sounds as though, on the one hand, this offer of $155 billion or $151 billion, whatever it is either an offer of services to the uninsured over some period of time, or it's more of a threat that if we don't get some insurance plan, we're actually not going to deliver this $155 billion of cost savings. Both of those are kind of disturbing to me as a consumer, because on the one hand, if it is an open-ended offer of services for the uninsured, my costs are going to go up as an insured person. And secondly, if it's a threat, it feels as though it could derail the entire deal.
I think you can characterize things in all kinds of ways. Seems to me what Senator Baucus has done is rather remarkable, and that is he's going to one constituency after the other, asking them to take a shared responsibility in making something very important happen for this country. And I just want to say, I don't give a darn really who came first in doing it. I'd like to see it done. I don't think anybody should be in this country without health care insurance. I think we should be trying to extend that quality to everywhere. And it wasn't born in the hospital minds yesterday. We've been trying to work on this steadily. This doesn't come from nowhere. It's not as if we've not been working to try to reduce infections, reduce errors, reduce length of stay, make surgery non-invasive.
I totally understand, but somewhere deep in this sort of everybody holding hands kumbaya moment with Joe Biden today, is there in the fine print a suggestion from the hospitals that if we don't get a reasonable deal here, we're going to start denying services?
I mean, and I want to add to that. David Hersenhorn said senators want to know what's the ask from hospitals. What's the ask?
I'm not interested in denying services. I'm interested in giving services. As a matter of fact, New York Presbyterian does about 20% of all the health care in New York City, and we welcome it. I want to make sure that it gets to everybody, because I think we have a quality product. We want to keep it quality, and we're on board with the idea we should try to keep the dollars as tight as possible.
And in fact, what a lot of hospitals will tell you is they're providing the coverage now and, in fact, not always getting paid for it. So their hope is that this legislation takes hold and more people are covered by some form of insurance, and therefore there's a guarantee that, you know, there will be paying patients, you know, again, not necessarily overly generous patients, but that between the government and the insurance deals that are reached, you have care that is covered in some way. But look, there's no question that, you know, at the heart of this is a separate other issue, which is, does, you know, do medical services in the United States get more efficient and more cost effective? And that's a very separate question.
And
the
not
bottom
just,
line is that the savings that the hospitals are going to provide.
We got to wrap, David. Sorry. And not just more volume. That's the question. David Herzenhorn of the New York Times covering healthcare. Dr. Herb Pardis, president and CEO of New York Presbyterian, talking to us about health reform. $151 billion on the table.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.